Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and WNST Baltimore Positive. We're stepping out for a little holiday chat, and Don Moeller's with me, and I want to give some love to our friends at Jennings and over at State Fair. We'll be back over there soon. We also have Police Commissioner Harrison joining us for an extensive Baltimore Positive chat in early December. You'll find that. That'll be at Fadley's then at Lexington Market. Don and I stretched out a little bit as I'm running around Asia to put some conversations together. We've talked about crime and education and politics and the future of the city, but this is going to be one that's a little bit different. We're going to welcome in Isaac Hammetz. He is the principal and research director at Mahan Reichel. Don, I love you for being the executive producer, because I did not know about Mahan Reichel, but then I went up to the website to see the landscape, the architecture, the urban planning. I don't know that I've ever had an urban planner on other than Janet Marie Smith, who does stadiums and all. We've had long conversations from my sports background, but I've always wanted to meet and talk to someone that develops neighborhoods. And first off, Isaac, welcome in. You guys are local. You've done all sorts of stuff from this side of the world to the other side of the world. Really appreciate you taking some time and coming on with us today.
Oh, thank you guys. Thank you guys for having us.
Well, so I got a story. And Damien Adority will love this one the most, because it involves Meriwether Post in Columbia on a summer night. My wife and I wanted shrimp toast from a Chinese place in Howard County, which is a Dundalk kid. I told Calvin Ball it was like paradise, Howard County. And I made a right-hand turn on the way to Meriwether. I said, we're not going to get on 29. We're not going to get... We took a back road. And I said to my wife, I found the most lovely park, and I want to show it to you. And we drove by. And this is a tribute to Jim Rouse. And I live across the street from Harbor Place and the former Harbor Place and what the next Harbor Place is going to be. Hopefully a guy like you will be a part of that. And I found the most lovely park. And I thought, you know, someone 20 or 30 years ago said this would be a nice place for a park, and I'd want to pull my wife over and hold her hand and walk out and have a snow cone or whatever we were doing at the time, or even have some shrimp toast. And I think to myself, who plans these awesome neighborhoods? And that's got to be the future of Baltimore. And I know you guys have been such a part of it. And I just wanted to give you a little oxygen to bring you on and say you build neighborhoods, and that's a pretty cool thing. And it involves a whole bunch of people like yourself, and especially locally, when we want to see a Harbor East. We want to see these things, the Port Covington. We've had Mark Weller on. These things come to life. Somebody needs to find a team of experts, and it begins with folks like you, right?
And you know what? Absolutely. And I want to re-emphasize the idea that this is a we, that it's a team, that all of us come together to do this kind of work. It takes the developers. It takes the financiers. It takes the engineers. And it takes the landscape architects, who I think, you know, we are one of the last great generalist professions. We synthesize information from a bunch of partners. And it really begins with listening to the community, listening to what the project goals are, what everybody wants to achieve, and what the outcomes are. And without that common understanding, without that commitment to listening, you can't create great places that are authentic and real, like the one you described, kind of stumbling upon, as if it was always there, kind of that secret garden, that special place that you found, that in your mind, it was 99% of the work was invisible. What you see is a special place because of all of the hands hard at work behind the scenes in order to make it possible.
Well, then there are things that are created, right? Like in the things that if you spend any time traveling, and I'm going to be in Asia and Tokyo and Seoul and seeing bullet trains, and we talk about a maglev and what that would mean to make Baltimore the Brooklyn of D.C. or, you know, but from a sports guy, and I'm 51 years old, the only time I ever really paid attention to architecture was when we built the baseball stadium, we built the football stadium, because Don and I are sports guys, right? The rest of it is just, hey, this is a beautiful hotel in Vegas, or isn't this a lovely mall that we've built, or a lovely structure. But I've gotten a lot more as Don ran Baltimore County, and we're trying to figure out the city, and we sit with the Mark Wellers of the world who say, you know, this Port Covington didn't have water, doesn't have electricity, you know, the infrastructure and TIFs and all of these complex issues. But beyond all of that, you're trying to build a place where people are going to live, right? Like, literally live in every way, functionally, transportation, food, lodging, what they're going to want to eat, places they're going to want to go, how they're going to get there. And sometimes it feels like it's not well orchestrated, but when it is, it's a beautiful thing to witness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? In a lot of ways, those are all of the big picture considerations that we have to take into account when we're thinking about these spaces. How do you get there? What do you do when you arrive? What's the experience that you're trying to orchestrate when someone moves through the space? But at the end of the day, what these places are, the streetscapes, the parks, the plazas, the little gardens that you stumble stumble upon in a community. They're places where communities come together to mix, to connect, to talk with each other, to see someone who's a little bit different. I think that's the magic of landscape architecture and urban design. It's that common ground that we all share that makes city living possible, that makes the difference similar, and bridges that gap a little bit in a way that allows all of it to function and be a bit more organized in the chaos of the world that we all live in.
Isaac, take what we like to do is to take the topics we're talking about and put a real face on it. So talk about a project in the city that you've been involved in, you and your firm, that you're proud of, and sort of take us from soup to nuts to understand how it began and how it got to that point where you sit back and your team looks and says, man, we can feel good about what we did there.
That's a great question. So I'll use an example of Pierce's Park in the Inner Harbor, kind of near the Columbus Center. That was a project we were a part of. It was a hardscape plaza. It was a space that really kind of didn't have a whole lot of life to it. And Pierce Flanagan, who was the patriarch of kind of the Flanagan Construction Company, was named in his honor. And so we started by really trying to understand the man who was Pierce Flanagan. What were the things that made him tick? What would tickle him being in that kind of a space? And kind of took that inspiration, understanding kind of who a person is in a space, and start to translate that. And some of his most things that inspired him was sailing, literacy, adventure. You know, he loved being on the water, and so he loved having the idea that kids would have a place to play and experience the water and experience adventure in the Inner Harbor.
All right, so you're talking about a place that I absolutely love, that I had no idea when I had you on. What is the word for, in the English language, when it's the same word, but it's spelled two different ways but has the same sound? It's not a palindrome. Homonym, thank you very much. Sue Mundy's going to shoot me. That's my English teacher, Isaac. It's a homonym park, right? I mean, like, we've walked through there. My wife and I always stop there. Like,
exactly.
I love Pierce. There's a weeping willow in front of there.
That's right. So you know what? So your reaction is perfect. You know, our design team could.
Wait till my wife finds out I'm talking to you.
We couldn't be happier. This is the magic, because you, as an adult, you love that space. You're getting off on the homonyms. You think
it's
willow
right
is awesome.
It's right in front of Roost Chris, man. I'm there all... Like, I live downtown, so we walk through there, and I always have thought, who came up with this idea?
Well, now you've got him on, so let's hear about it.
Okay, so let's step it back. So we wanted to know, what the heart and soul of this place was going to be, and we drew inspiration from the man behind the project, the man who was bigger, larger than life, and it really often does start with that, the people. Who are going to be the people that are inspiring the project, and who are the people that are going to use it? And so, our understanding by working with the Waterfront Partnership, with Living Classrooms, with all of the partners involved with the city, with the Downtown Baltimore Family Alliance, was understanding that that park, wasn't just going to be about Pierce, it was going to be about all the families, like yours, who go to Ruth's Chris, who bring their kids to the Inner Harbor, the people of Baltimore who wanted a place to play where adults and kids, it didn't matter what your age range was, you would have a place where you could have some kind of discovery, whether it was literary or learning something a little bit about stormwater and how when it rains it's connected to the harbor, or if you're just interested in grabbing your snowboard when it rains and flying through this sculpture that's also a slide.
I'm not a kid. I haven't done any of that. I just
you
the homonyms,
YouTube.
I dig the weeping willow and the homonyms, honestly, I dig the kids are having fun there. I've seen a lot of kids having fun there.
Yeah, no doubt. And like I said, check out YouTube. You can see people who've taken advantage of the winter sports at Pierce's Park. It's a pretty exciting place.
So, imagine how good this segment would be if I green roomed it, Don. We got Isaac Hammonds here. I want to give a little background for you guys. Mahan Reichel. Is this a Baltimore company?
You bet it is. We've been here for 36 years. It was started by Catherine Mahan in 1983. She was working at a much larger landscape architecture firm and found that at the time she couldn't be both a working mom and a professional. So she decided, what the hell with this. I'm going to start my own thing. She was way ahead of her time in terms of understanding the place of women in the workplace. And so set this place up, to be a place where we could kind of practice landscape architecture at the highest level, but also where we could kind of have a family atmosphere and contribute positively to Baltimore. And so our roots are here in the city. You know, we started early on in a row house and have kind of continued to grow and kind of committed to being here in Baltimore ever since. And Scott Reichel joined the firm in 93, brought a new kind of approach to the practice, expanded our work into international kind of territory to be a global practice, doing work as far as China to the other side of the world. I'm not sure we're in Tokyo, but we can check on that for you.
They have nice things in Tokyo. I've been once. I'm going to be there looking for the water gardens.
Find
him
apart.
I'm going to be stealing ideas. You know, Isaac, I see places like Detroit, like Cleveland. One of the reasons I was inspired to do this, not just that I've known Don for four decades and he was running the county last year, and I have all of this time to tell stories, and it's not about box scores as much anymore, but I travel for sports. You know, I go to Cleveland. I go to Nashville. I go to Charlotte. I see new architecture. I see new things. And when I see Baltimore, and I tell people this all the time, I was at the Maritime Magic, walking out on the pier. I love the city so much. My wife and I love the city. You see the lights, and it looks so European, right? Like, it looks different than any other place in America, maybe other than Boston, Providence, some of those places that would look that way. But the row homes and the way that works, when we finally rip out all of the asbestos homes and the lead paint, and we lower places that quite frankly are going to need to be lowered in this area, the next group of architecture that comes up in our city, it's going to be dependent upon civic planners and architects to create places within the checkerboard of our city. And I have it behind me on the wall, neighborhood to neighborhood, to redevelop these neighborhoods. What is smart urban design? Not building things to the sky in Saudi Arabia or billion-dollar projects in Harbor Reach for Louis Vuitton and Gucci, right? I'm talking about places people live that are lower-income places, that are places that the next blue-collar, the next rank-and-file American will want to live in the next 30 years in a place like Baltimore. How do we get up the snuff to these towns that are doing it better than we're doing it?
You know, it's a great question, and we talk a lot about this in the office because Baltimore has not yet been the kind of, or it used to be, but it's not right now the kind of city where we're doing this heroic gesture to kind of remake everything all at once. And honestly, that's a good thing, because what people really want are places that feel comfortable and give them the accessibility and the kinds of quality of life that you want to kind of return to day in and day out. And so, you know, we really need to start by building on the bones that we've got. We have this incredible history. You know, the Port of Baltimore, 1798. I mean, we have this richness of history, you know, below the Mason-Dixon line, northern city. There's so much richness in the fabric of this place. It's not about cleaning it and scrubbing it and erasing that. It's about lifting all that up and first and foremost, connecting the dots, providing the common ground, the streetscapes, the parks, the plazas. And it's not about the heroic gesture. It's not always going to be about the high design of something like a Pierce's Park, but it's about making the space where people can come together and think about what do we collectively want? How do we want to live as a group of people in a place, and understanding what that looks like and what that feels like? And so I think, you know, we really do need to find ways to improve our streetscape so that we have, you know, places to sit and linger, where we can have those accidental or spontaneous encounters with someone who's a bit different than we are. And that's not always comfortable. And the point of great urban design or great design in general is not always about comfort. Sometimes it is, and you want those kinds of spaces where you can just lay out, kick your feet up, have a, you know, like Sandlot. Sandlot's a great example of a project where it's all about the comfort and the experience down in Harbor Point. It's something that we worked on with Beatty Development and Food Shed. You know, that's a massive project coming out of the ground in Baltimore that is really kind of pushing the envelope as far as kind of redevelopment, waterfront development. And that's a place where you can go and spend a couple hours, enjoy these great Baltimore views of the waterfront. But that's
guilty as charged. Been there too.
There you go. So you are a frequent flyer in the Baltimore, landscape.
How do you think I stay skinny with all that food I'm eating over at Jenny's and State Fair?
Isaac, when you and your team, when you and the Brian Dunns and the others sit down over there and you whiteboard projects, and you start, it sounds to me like you almost always start, and correct me if I'm wrong, with livability. How do we make this place more livable. So if that's correct, talk to me about what kind of things you're, to you, constitute livability.
Yeah, you know, that is you're absolutely right. I think you start by livability. You start by thinking about the outside just like you would your living room. What are the things that are going to make you comfortable in your living room or in your favorite bar? You know, a lot of people, I think, don't understand what landscape architecture is, right? It's what is this thing? Is it gardening? Are you going to come do my backyard, my front yard? But it's really thinking about the city in terms of it being kind of a big constellation of rooms that we all occupy. And so it really starts by asking that question. Who are the people? What are the things that make them comfortable? And that includes things like you want shade, you want site furnishings, you want to have a place to sit, you want to have things that give you what the environmental psychologists kind of talk about as restoration, place, little soft fascinations, and that's kind of a geeky term, and you know, you'll have to forgive me for nerding out a little bit on that, but these ideas that when we're getting dappled light and you see, you know, leaves rustling, those things kind of catch your eye, catch your attention, and you forget about some of the other things that might be going on in your life, and that's as much about livability, having that ability to pause, as it is putting your butt down on a nice, comfortable seat that isn't too hot in the summer, that isn't too cold in the winter. So, you know, we're crossing kind of, when we think about livability in a landscape, in an outside room, we're thinking about physical comfort and really emotional comfort, too. You don't want to have places that people might think, oh, someone hiding behind that bush over there, is it safe, is it not safe? So we're really trying to understand this idea of livability, you know, really at the physical, like what makes people physically comfortable, but also what makes people emotionally comfortable.
Well, that involves a whole lot of studies that, you know, go above and beyond of you know, what color paint. I mean, that you ask a lot of questions to get that sort of feedback.
That's a great point, Nestor. That's where I wanted to go with that, Isaac, is I imagine that on the front end of this, you and your team, fairly labor-intensive in terms of seeking input from the community.
You bet. And so there, I think there are two layers that we really try and kind of dig in so that we can understand, because we're not always the smartest people in the room. In fact, I would say most of the time we're not the smartest people in the room, but we're willing to ask the right questions and listen. And so that means asking the right questions to the actual community members who are going to be using these spaces, so that can take shape as, you know, field intercepts. We're grabbing people on the street and saying, okay, guys, you've used this space before. What does it feel like? What's it missing? What's working? And being able to understand that the people who occupy these places, the neighborhoods that we're working in, whether it's Pigtown or Waverly or Patterson Park, it doesn't matter. They know these spaces like the back of their hand. So we do tons of work like that on the ground, in the field. Sometimes there are large public meetings where we're listening and having surveys. And, you know, whether it's, again, Rash Field, where we had, I think, something like 1,500 people respond to an online survey telling us what they thought should be there.
Well, that's my neighborhood. It's out literally outside my back door, right?
Nestor, we are doing all the right things for you. You're coming to all of our places.
Well, tell Nestor what he's going to like about Rash Field.
Before we jump into that, I'm going to do that in a minute, Don. I want to come back to the other side of this because, you know, again, this idea I mentioned, environmental psychology, we're not putting out all of those research papers, because the other side of this is talking to academics, talking to other professionals, allied disciplines, who can point us in the direction and answer real questions. Nestor, you were joking, but people do know what paint colors make people feel different ways. And we've got to ask all of those people those kinds of questions. And if it's a healthcare environment, like at Kennedy Krieger, where we were working with a therapist there to design spaces that have the right textures for the kinds of therapeutic treatments that people are going to undertake, it's being able to ask the right questions. And that comes from asking the people who use these spaces, but also asking the people who study people's reactions and study those spaces. So, you know, the same way that it's about physical comfort and emotional comfort, it's about listening to the community, but also these other experts that we have kind of built relationships with over many years, so we've got them on our bench. You know, to use the sports analogy here, we've got this bench of really smart people that we trust and we can talk to about these things. So that's kind of how we start our process. And so over at Rash Field, you know, we've listened to the community. They want that to be kind of the active, you know, waterfront location, kind of like, you know, your Venice Beach in California, a place where you can go. And either if you're just kind of going to watch or going to participate, it's going to be a great place to be. And you know, that also includes cooperation, collaboration with an architecture firm here in Baltimore called Gensler. They're a great firm. We love working with them. We work with them on Eagar Park, too. There's going to be architecture, a pretty stunning pavilion out there. And for one of the first times, in Baltimore's recent history, certainly, there's going to be the opportunity to buy food in the park. You can grab a drink. You can have some food. You can linger there. And, again, watch people playing volleyball, watch people at a skate park. You know, there'll be a new skate park there down in the Inner Harbor. So there are youth opportunities for play and recreation.
Good, them, like, riding in front of my house on the waterfront park, that's not good. I'm glad there is a place, you know. I'm from Dundalk. I got a bucket. Lassick, a lot of friends of mine, you know, Rudy, my friends were all skateboarders 30 years ago. You were outcast, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You're thrown out of the neighborhood over in East Baltimore. Having a place is important. I mean, Bondi Beach, I've been in Australia, you know, in Sydney. There's an entire bowl down there that lives there, Ocean City, you know?
No doubt. And it sounds to me, Isaac and Nestor, that what you've tapped into and what Nestor and I have heard an awful lot about over the past 9 months, is we've got to do a better job of making the Inner Harbor and its surrounding areas feel like it's open to Baltimore residents, young, old, middle-aged, make it
not just a place
for tourists,
right,
but
exactly.
Open to the residents.
Absolutely, and you know how you do that. It's about cultivating what's authentic about Baltimore. You know, kids love going down to the water. Everybody loves going down to the water. So it's not about shooing people away from the harbor so that we can polish it and make it, you know, sexy for some outsider to come. We want outsiders to feel comfortable and have great experiences in the Inner Harbor. But we want the Inner Harbor to be a place where the culture and the people of Baltimore rise up, and it becomes this place where we show off what is best and most interesting about us. You know, you mentioned Bondi Beach. You know, those are places where they've said, you know, we're investing, we're committing to kind of cultivating something special about a particular place. And the Inner Harbor did that, you know, in the 80s when it was redeveloped. It had that spirit. And part of what we're going through right now in the city is saying, okay, what's our spirit today? What do we want to show off? What do we want to showcase when people come and visit our city? And it is about being able to give people this diversity of experiences, whether you want to skate and show off that way, you want to go be doing your beach volleyball, you want to be, you know, engaging nature in the Inner Harbor, you want to play in a different way, kinetic sculptures, those kinds of things. That you have great, great stuff happening over at Patterson Park and AVAM. We'll have a kinetic park out there for kids to play and connect with the Science Center. So it's all about cultivating that authentic experience that makes people want to come back time and again. And I think that's the kind of thing that for residents of the city has been missing for a little bit of time in the Inner Harbor, that we're trying to really refresh and think long and hard about what does the Inner Harbor mean to the city, and not just from kind of the outside perspective, but really from kind of that inside perspective of a firm and that knows how to listen, but that's also been here for 36 years.
Really? Isaac Hammett joining us here. He's a principal research director at Mahan Reichel.
I know we've got to let him go. We're going to have him back. But before we let you go, it would be malpractice if we didn't ask you, can you give us a real quick, and I guess I hate to limit you in time, but can you sort of summarize what's happening with the middle branch? Because it seems like a project that many, many people are excited about. You're involved in it. Can you tell our listeners and our viewers what the heck the middle branch is and why they should be excited?
Yeah, you bet. It's a great segue from the Inner Harbor to the middle branch, right? The middle branch is kind of the forgotten harbor of Baltimore. It's the southern harbor, the middle branch of the Patapsco River. It's an incredible natural resource that falls in kind of the city's boundaries. And it's totally different than the Inner Harbor. It's got soft shorelines. It's got, you know, big, expansive open space and big views to the Patapsco and beyond. And what's happening right now is that there was a competition to revitalize and reimagine kind of the 11 miles of the middle branch from the kind of west side of Port Covington all the way around towards Masonville Cove Environmental Education Center. And our team...
You're talking Waterview Avenue and Westport, that whole area where they row and under the Hanover Street Bridge, correct?
You got it. That's exactly right. Past the Hanover Street Bridge, you know, just the other side of kind of the east side of the Hanover Street Bridge is kind of where the project limits end.
Well, and I think for most people, it's very obvious all these years that it's been undeveloped, kind of like the Ritz property was undeveloped for years and years and years. You're like, something's going to come there, right?
Exactly. And you know, so we were on a team with a Dutch landscape architecture firm called West 8, Parks and People, the South Baltimore Gateway Partnership, the City of Baltimore put out, you know, this competition. We teamed up with this great firm, West 8, and we came up together with this idea, and we were the kind of winning entry in the competition. Right now, you know, we're working through some of the contract negotiations with the city and all that kind of good stuff, the nitty gritty. But big picture, the idea is to reimagine kind of how these parklands, right? It's this new soft space that we can pull back into the communities, back into Cherry Hill, back into all the communities that are out there. It's not just about the waterfront. I think that's one of the things I want to emphasize when we think about reimagining the 11 miles of shoreline that we've got, that includes the great spaces that you mentioned, the development opportunities. But it's also about those things that make cities livable. It's about those connections, those streets that kind of pull back into the community, that provide accessible and safe routes to the waterfront, to the parks. And how do we make sure that relationship between kind of park making and waterfront, it also stimulates growth and equitable development in communities that are adjacent to the waterfront? So that big picture, that's what it's about. It's about reimagining kind of the parklands around the Middle Branch, but also the communities around it, and with and together with those communities, because it can't happen alone. There have been so many kind of plans on the books for the Middle Branch. I mean, stretch that far back, you can the city plans, there are private sector plans, there's Army Corps of Engineers plans. You know, this time, what we're hoping to see is an opportunity and some action with the team of partners that we're all working together with, and that's what's exciting. Is there a lot of people around the table right now, kind of committed to seeing this one through, and we're early in the process, but again, 11 miles of waterfront, tons of park space, tons of opportunity to bring people to the waterfront, tons of opportunity to bring kind of investment from waterside back landside and into the community, and it's a generational project. It's the kind of thing that like the Inner Harbor in the 80s, really kind of gave a shot in the arm to the city. I think the Middle Branch has that kind of opportunity. Is right there for us.
Well, what they've done down at City Garage is beautiful. I know the Ravens are taking advantage of that. I've been down there, and I was kind of blown away by how the trails were there and how sophisticated that area was, and so quickly. And I think once you visited, there is something nice about being outside 6 months of the year on the water here and taking advantage of that. Isaac, we got to let you roll, man. Next thing for you and me is a large Rofo coffee, sitting and listening to the chimes and comparing homonyms together at Pierce's Park. All right,
I love it. That sounds great. And when you get overseas and when you come back after your tour abroad, I hope you take pictures. I hope you share with us what you learned, because that's part of it. That travel is a big part of it. And so we look forward to having you come back, getting that cup of coffee, sitting in Pierce's Park together. I appreciate the time. I appreciate what you both are doing, bringing positive light to Baltimore, some of the great stories that are happening in the city. So thank you guys. Have a happy holidays. Enjoy your trip, and thank you guys a bunch.
Hey, appreciate you. Hope you'll come back and update us on each of these projects.
You bet. You just give us the word. We're happy to come. It's been a blast.
Thank you.
Isaac Hammett, principal and research director at Mahan Reichel. Maybe you haven't heard of them, but you probably should definitely have walked through something they've built. You can learn more at their website at Mahan Reichel. I'm gonna spell that out: MahanRyKiel. Don and I kind of stretched out here early December, just doing a few little one-off conversations about cool stuff going on. That was the whole spirit of Baltimore Positive, not just to talk to politicians or newsmakers, but to talk about people doing stuff that's good stuff here in Baltimore.
Good people making a difference.
Pendry and Harbor East and all sorts of cool stuff in Mahan Reichel. I've been clicking around to see all their neato work. So, God, you're introducing me to new friends.
Great stuff.
Jennings Cafe. We'll be back over at Catonsville real soon, getting to Jennings Burger. If you haven't heard our conversation with Matt Skur, I hope you do that. And also, we're going to be back at State Fair very soon. You can check out all the episodes of Baltimore Positive and back at Fade Lee's at Lexington Market with Police Commissioner Harrison. All of it up at Baltimore Positive. He is Don. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking good stuff around Baltimore.